Welcome to the Kindling's Muse podcast.
Hi, this is Dick Staub with another in our Journeys series, conversations with thoughtful creatives and cultural influencers on their life, work, and personal journey. Today, we continue our conversation with Ferenc Martel. Now, where are you living now?
We're in a place called Montepulciano, which is south of Siena and south of Florence in the hills of Tuscany.
Okay. So now when you come back to New York, are you an evangelist for what it is that you have done? Do you end up at parties becoming either the guy nobody wants to talk to because they don't want to have this guilt trip laid on them, or do you find yourself irrepressibly wanting to convince your friends that there's a better way of life?
No, because I almost feel guilty about what I'm doing out there, you know, so I don't want to make him feel bad. I'm just very quiet about it, but I'm not a very party person. I miss terribly being at home, and the problem with having such a quiet country life is that your family becomes so important to you, and your neighbors become so important to you that when you're away from them, there's enormous void, you know, and
it's very
difficult to replace with other things.
Now, do you feel a sense, there are some people that feel that it would be, that good stewardship on their part requires being in areas where there is a large public, because they feel in fact that their calling in life is to have influence on others, and they feel that living out in a small place in Tuscany is essentially an abandonment of that sense of responsibility to others. Do you ever feel that way? Do you ever have people reflect that? Is there a reason why they just could never do what you've done?
Dick, I think that's completely the opposite of what I feel to be the truth. I don't think anybody in New York has any influence on anything. I mean, there's more isolationism in New York and more desperately insular lives in New York City than anywhere. Sure, the people go and get their job done, but there's very little interaction from what I know in a job place, and certainly none in the apartment buildings, or very, very little. I mean, I feel desperate in the apartment that we stay in here. I feel desperately that if I needed anybody, I'd have to call 911. Whereas in Tuscany, you'd have the support and you have the influence. You can influence the world by influencing your family and your children and your neighbors and your friends. You can actually physically influence those people, and I think...
But in what sense are you... I have kids, and I ask myself, if I went out and did what you have done, I would wonder if I am properly equipping my kids to live in suburban-urban life, because I would wonder if I am ruining that experience for them by providing them with something that they would never want to leave. Interestingly enough, though, conversely, I find that when I reflect back on the kids that I knew, because I at one time lived in a small town in Southern Oregon, or I'm thinking about a Northern Californian town that was a very small agrarian town, and virtually all the kids couldn't wait to get out of that. They all wanted to go to the big city. So, I mean, in what sense do we, as it relates to children, prepare them for, quote, real life if we raise them in the quiet communitarian life that you're describing in the hills of Tuscany?
Well, see, the thing in Tuscany, it is different. In Tuscany, there isn't this movement or this dire need, and certainly not witnessable anywhere, to go to the big city. The Tuscan towns are very, very self-contained. The problem with, I think, North America is that little towns have always been sort of a place where you sort of grow up and abandon as soon as you can and leave and go to the big city, because that's where things happen. Where Tuscans are so firmly believers in their towns that the town is vitally alive. We have great concerts in our towns. We have some of the best musicians in Europe coming to our towns. A festival that's 2 weeks long, that where musicians, from the very, very best of them from all over the world, come to perform and performances. It is not a town that is desperately lacking culture or companionship or performance. There are two theater groups in our town of 3,000, inside the walls are 2,000 people. There's music constantly. There's concerts in churches constantly. It isn't the sort of tiny town with nothing going on, sort of North American style, that are being left by people as soon as they can get out.
Mm-hmm.
Plus, the foundation is, and the family ties are enormous in Tuscany. If, you know, there's a saying that, somebody made a comparison, and in North America, if somebody's 21 years old and is staying at home, people say, "What's wrong with that kid?"
Yeah.
But if somebody in Tuscany is 21 and leaves, they say, "What's wrong with that family?" I mean, to suggest that, you know, something is lacking if that person had to leave, because the family gives you so much support, and it's a very large family in Tuscany.
Okay. Now let's go back and fill in some of the gaps here. You made a decision, and it's rather hilariously described in the book as rather spontaneous, and your wife, who evidently views herself as somewhat more practical than you, as a matter of fact, one point saying you're a nice guy, like an attendant calming a mental patient, you say, but you in reality just don't mix. Tell us what led to your decision to go to Tuscany and why you were at a place where this seemed like a reasonable thing to do.
Well, we had traveled a lot. We lived in Vancouver. We lived up and down the coast. We built a sailboat when we were in our 20s, a big sailboat, and we sailed in that for 3 years up and down from Mexico all the way to Alaska. And had lived in Paris for a year, lived in New York for a couple of years. And none of those places seemed like a place that, where you could spend a prolonged amount of time. And Tuscany seemed that, with its stability, with its warmth of the people, with its communities that seemed to be so vital. It seemed exactly like the place where you could happily thrive. And it's odd, isn't it? I mean, I didn't speak a word of Italian when I got there. I actually bought the house speaking a very slow French to the architect who sold us the place, and he spoke a very slow Italian so I could understand it, and we spoke these two languages walking down the street. People looking at us like we were crazy. But apart from that, it just something is just, and I almost had tears in my eyes when I was there. I just thought, this feels like home, and for all the reasons that I discussed. And seeing kids just running around playing in the streets, kicking balls or bags or something, the spontaneity, the sort of creativity that was sort of pouring out of everybody. It wasn't the sort of obsession with Walkmans and Talkmans and listens and Watchmans and all those things. People were actually being people in, like they had been for 10,000 years. And you were saying that, well, if you don't equip your kid for real life, I think that is real life. I think you become such an individual out in the country. I think you become such a well-founded person that you think that you get a sense of belonging, not just in the community, but on this earth and this universe. You really think, yes, the tree belongs, I belong here. And you learn to look after yourself, to entertain yourself. I mean, we have a 10-year-old kid, and we go back and forth two or three times between continents, and he sometimes sits with other people, depends if I want to talk to Candace or not on the plane, and often he's very chatty, and, you know, we always apologize to the person next to him and start if he's talking too much, and invariably people say, this is the best conversation I've had for a long time from anybody, because he is so reliant to find his entertainment in other people, and he has learned how to do that. He has learned to ask questions. He doesn't just sit down and start blabbing about some name of some toy that nobody understands. He actually says, oh, where are you going? Have you been there? What, do you like the architecture? Do you like the buildings? Do you like the food? He's 10 years old. You know, I think that is getting somebody ready for life. Yeah. I don't think teaching him a lot of sort of technical details. I think, you know, mice can learn that in a few days. It's not particularly a human need
now,
to train.
Now, describe the place that you bought for people.
Ah, well, we're about a mile from town. It's a little dusty road that runs along the ridge, and there's five houses along this half a mile of dusty road. And it's an old farmhouse, a few hundred years old, that was built as stables down below and living quarters up above. That's been converted now to living quarters everywhere. And the five families who live on the road, most of them work the land, very small pieces, 15, 16 acres of mixed farming, as I said, olives, small vineyards, a few animals. Everybody has their own chickens and a pig or so. And, of course, you know, these are very, very well-founded people in the sense that a bottle of wine brings $70 there, and olive oil is the same, and you can get 50 bottles of olive oil off one tree. So you're not desperately poor people, but terribly content people.
Join us next time for more conversation with Frank Mattei about Hills of Tuscany. Thank you for listening to Journeys on the Kindling's Muse. Thank you for listening to The Kindling's Muse. If this program sparks something in you, I invite you to participate at www.thekindlings.com. That's K-I-N-D-L-I-N-G-S. Share this program, tell a friend, or just leave a comment at www.thekindlings.com.